come back.
Welcome into the Saturday Show, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Saturday morning. I'm Jay Catch. Typically, I have got Michelle Bodkin across the way from me here in our studios here at KSL Broadcast House, but she is on her way up to Rice-Eccles Stadium for today's game as Cal takes on the University of Utah. She's going to join us a little later on in today's show. So I am rolling solo today, but that does not mean I'm not going to have some friends stopping by. I have, of course, our good friend Jason Jones producing behind the glass. Jason, what's up?
You know, it's a good day. It's a beautiful day.
Yeah, it is a beautiful day. I'll give you that.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So we got a lot to cover ahead on today's show. We're going to be joined by Jeremy Clark from HornFrogBlitz.com, part of the 24/7 Sports Network, at 10:30. He'll join us to talk about TCU as they take on BYU in Big 12 action today. As I mentioned, the aforementioned Michelle Bodkin will check in at 11 o'clock. She'll talk about Cal versus Utah, which we have learned this morning, reports out there that still no Cam Rising. It continues another week of the Cam Rising watch. Jason's shaking his head. You're just like everybody else out there, I think.
No words. Okay. I mean, yeah. just no words at this point.
Well, I think everybody's with you on that. Like, it's just, you look at it, you're like, that's what it is right now. Yeah. Anyways, but so we'll continue to track all that, obviously, get you ready for that game coming up. And we got plenty of other stuff to get to. I've been out for a little bit. I had a kid, so I have been away for a little while. It's good to be back in the saddle and talking all things sports, but we got a fun show ahead, so thank you for tuning in. One thing real quick also is that we're going to have technical fouls coming up. We will also be talking about the Utah Jazz. Their preseason slate continues to roll on, so it's going to be a busy, busy addition to the show. But Jason, I have been away for a little while, and you have you produced a show that I have done yet? I don't know if we've...
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
It's been a while.
It's been a while. Okay.
Right.
So I think you know how we do when we start the show when I'm on it.
Sure.
Highlight of your week. What you got?
You know, it's been an interesting week.
Okay.
Let's say that. First, congratulations
to you.
Thank
you. Appreciate
it. I wanted to say congratulations to you. But it's been an interesting week. And in fact, I do have to say that this is, I am a fan of all sports.
Okay.
I do not pick and choose per se. My favorite is baseball, my second favorite's hockey, and then football and basketball. So this right now is one of my favorite times of year.
Well, October is one of the great sports months on the calendar.
Of course, because I mean, hockey just, you know, faced off, you should say, kicked off, whatever.
They dropped the puck.
Dropped the puck. There we go. That started this week. Uh-huh. We got basketball that's ramping up. We've already got football underway. We're wrapping up baseball. And I mean, I watch baseball all year long, but it's definitely the playoffs. I mean, that's where it's at. So for me, this is the best time of year as far as sports is concerned. And my wife hates it because I'm constantly walking around with at least one, if not two or three devices in my hands watching different sports. And so, yeah.
Well, it sounds about right. My wife's got the same thing going in her world. But yeah, it's a really, really fun time of year. The sports calendar, the confluence of all of it. Hockey kicked off, dropped the puck, whatever, this week. Mentioned Major League Baseball playoffs. The NFL's rolling. College football. I've got what game we got on here? I walked in. We had a TV game going. It looks like, is that James Madison versus Georgia Southern? All right. G5 football. I had some Belt action.
James Madison. That's where I grew up back in that area. So yeah. So I know JMU really well.
Well, they came out and played Utah State, obviously, in a wild game in that one. But that one's just underway, 0-0 between Georgia Southern and James Madison in the Fun Belt, as we like to call it. But let's talk a little about what's going on with BYU and Utah to kick off today's show. I'm thinking of today's show essentially as an extended pregame show for both of these programs. You got BYU taking on TCU. That'll be a 1:30 kickoff. Of course, the Cougar pregame show with Alex Keery and myself will begin at 12:30. Then at 1 o'clock, you got the University of Utah taking on the Cal Golden Bears. Cal making the trip out here to Salt Lake City. Both of these teams, speaking of BYU and Utah, coming off of a bye week and obviously trying to heal up a little bit. But as we mentioned, to kind of kick off today's show, according to Pete Thamel, of course, the college football insider for ESPN.com, no Cam Rising expected today for the University of Utah. But a little bit of a surprise in that regard, and I'll get your thought on this real quick, Jason, is that they're going to say Bryson Barnes is going to start today. Now, the last time we saw Bryson Barnes play, he took a helmet to the midsection rib area that sent him to the hospital
right
in Corvallis, Oregon.
Right.
Well, apparently he's been able to heal up during the bye week, and he's expected to start today. Nate Johnson playing the change of pace quarterback role he's been playing earlier this season.
Okay. So. Yeah. I mean, you know what? If he can throw every pass like that first pass he threw against Florida, well, yeah. then Utah would go and win a national championship.
Sure, everybody would, yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't think he can, so that's a problem. But, hey, why not? At this point,
it's kind of a crazy confluence of events going on right now, obviously. But Utah looking forward to this one, obviously. They're 4-1. The offense has been paltry in terms of its output over the last two games. 7 points for the offense in the last two games. Of course, the 7 other points that came in the win over UCLA were by virtue of a pick six. Going to be an interesting game today, though, because Cal is an interesting program. Kyle Whittingham said it earlier this week during his media availability. He said that Cal's offense looks a lot better than it has in recent years. But the bigger question mark is they have a new quarterback, Mendoza. He's a freshman, came in and really injected some life into the Cal Bears. The problem is the last time UCLA brought a freshman quarterback to Salt Lake City, that would be one Dante Moore, of course, who was like the all everything hotshot freshman quarterback. He got shut down. He Utah got after him. I got to be thinking that Utah's thinking similarly in this circumstance with this Mendoza kid coming in from Cal.
Yeah, I mean, putting a freshman quarterback in against that Utah defense is never, you just can't expect a whole lot.
Sure.
In that situation. I mean, you know what, the kid's got, 5-6 games under his belt at this point in time?
He's got like 2 or 3. They started the year with Sam Jackson
the
TCU transfer.
Okay. That's right.
They've kind of gone through different quarterbacks. But we had Jeff Ferrato on with DJ and PK. That would have been Thursday morning. And he came on and said, this kid was a guy that they thought was kind of the future. He's a freshman.
Right.
Okay, you're building towards the future. But they said just by necessity, because of the offense was not doing what Justin Wilcox and the rest of the Cal staff wanted to do, they put this kid into the lineup, and he's really in many ways kind of reinvigorated their offense. But here's the thing. Dante Moore and UCLA were flying high, came to Salt Lake City and got grounded.
Right. Yeah, and you can't expect too much out of a freshman quarterback against a defense like Utah's.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, that's clearly the best part of Utah's game is the defensive side of the ball. I mean, we all recognize that with Cam Rising out and with half the running backs out. And, so clearly, it's the defense that's – and you're right. They've got to be salivating. I mean, they're up there just, licking their chops, waiting to get after it on another freshman quarterback.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I look at this game, and this is just the thing with Utah is looking at it right now. The formula for Utah for success this season is going to be more of what we have seen until Cam Rising, if and when he gets back. Now, massive question mark, is he going to be available next week against USC? Who knows at this point? I refuse to speculate any further on that part of it. The bigger question I've got on the Utah side of things is Utah fans, and if you're listening, I'd love to hear from you guys. So you can tweet at us, at Jacob C. Hatch. You can send into the Zone Twitter feed as well, at Zone Sports Network. You can let us know, are you okay with the way Utah's winning these football games? And what that means is you're doing it with stingy defense and, in the case of UCLA, just enough points, 14-7 by virtue of a pick six. Obviously, in Corvallis against Oregon State, you got completely shut down. You only had the one touchdown. Are you okay with the way Utah's formula for success this season is, or are you thinking, I give up? I don't know how to phrase that question correctly, but what are your thoughts? Where do you stand? I know, Jason, you're a little more inclined on the Utah side of things. So where do you stand on this? Are you okay with the way they're doing this?
So, for me, winning is winning. Yeah. I would love to see them go out there. I would have loved to see them in the offseason get a transfer quarterback.
Well, I think all of us in retrospect.
Yeah, we know why they didn't. I think everybody's been expecting. Cam Rising was expecting. Kyle Whittingham was expecting. They were expecting Cam Rising to play in the beginning. They thought he was maybe missed the first week, and then other than that, he should be good to go. So, they've been planning on it. So I understand why they didn't go out and get a transfer quarterback. So in hindsight, because of the fact they didn't do that, or I guess I shouldn't say in hindsight, but from now on, a win is a win at this point. And yeah. if you're a Utah fan, you probably should be happy to get wins. Maybe Cam Rising comes back at some point. We hope he comes back at some point. And if he comes back, hopefully it doesn't take him too long to get back up to game speed. And he can, you know, he can just go from there and you win, and he wins you some games. Until that happens, you want to minimize the damage as much as possible. And if that formula is by letting the defense dominate everything, then by all means, get the wins while you can.
Sure. And that's the thing about it is I talk about it all the time when I talk with fans. I'm like, what in the end do you really want from your team? You want your team to have more points than the other team at the end of the game and win the football game. It's much more fun to win than it is to lose. And that's kind of the storyline right now with regards to the University of Utah. Is it sexy? Is it high-flying? Absolutely not. And the other thing on this I'll just add is that Cam Rising will come back and I think add a lot to Utah's offense. The problem is the issues with Utah's offense so far this season go much deeper than just the quarterback position. You had running backs go down. There are three or four running backs down right now. You lost Chris Curry, who a lot of people were hoping would come in and kind of do some of what he had done before he got injured last year. And then he has a non-contact knee injury, according to Kyle Whittingham, in his healthy knee, his quote-unquote healthy knee, right. during practice this week, and he's done for the year
yeah.
again.
Yeah,
that's tough to absorb. Now, offensive line has not been operating the way that we all thought it was. I thought both BYU and Utah's offensive lines might right. be the strength right. of these teams this year. Neither one has lived up to the hype so far. That's the concern you got to have for Utah in particular. We'll get to BYU here in a minute. Is with the Utes, you're looking at this saying, okay, Cam Rising can do a lot. He can offer a lot to this offense. He can unlock a lot of the different things the offense has done in the past. The issue is, you get out there on the football field, he's only one guy. There's 10 other guys operating around him. And if he, by the way, on a surgically reconstructed knee, which had a lot more damage in it than any of us thought, that's the thing about this as well, is none of us expected him, it wasn't as cut and dry as he tore his ACL, cleaned it up, and he repair it, and he'll be back. No, he announced he had his meniscus torn, his MCL torn, there's one other ligament or tendon in there that also was damaged. That's a lot longer.
Right.
Chris Kimrani from The Athletic caught up with Neil Elatrosh, who is one of the foremost, if not the foremost, orthopedic surgeon in the world right now,
right.
who did the surgery for Cam Rising. And he said, yeah, it's usually a 10 to 12 month recovery window. Well, that surgery happened sometime in January. So we're at the 9 month mark right now.
Right.
We haven't even entered the window that he claimed was the recovery window. But then in the same story, he almost contradicts himself by saying, well, he's had no swelling in that knee. It could be 1 to 2 weeks before he's back. It's like, what is it?
I think it sounds like he's just trying to hedge his bets and make sure that, you know, well, you know, it's typically 12 months. So if he doesn't yeah. come back at all this year, don't be surprised. But there's no swelling. The progress has been going well. The rehab's yeah. been going well. So potentially he could be back sooner than that.
So let me just reiterate the point that, yeah, Utah continue to win football games. Now, you do have to have some concern that what Oregon State did to Utah in their most recent game, obviously they've had a week off, they're back in action after a bye week. The most recent game against the Oregon State Beavers had you thinking, well, why isn't everybody going to follow that format on us? They're going to run the ball down our throat, play stingy defense, and just kind of sit and make our quarterback beat us. And that's whether it's Nate Johnson, Bryson Barnes, Brandon Rose gets back at some point this season, whoever it may be. You got to be concerned that the rest of the pieces on Utah's offense right now are contributing to some of the issues they're having. Like I said, I think Cam Rising can unlock a lot. You got to see an uptick with the other guys. And by the way, the injury bug for Utah, it's unlike anything I've seen right. in recent memory.
No, it's bad.
Not pretty.
I mean, yeah. with Keithy being out, and mm-hmm. I mean, it just the pieces that you would expect, because you would expect if the running backs were healthy, that would help Bryson Barnes in the sense that you can establish this running game and take the pressure off of him to be the guy that, you know, has to beat you.
Correct. Yes.
And you know, and you pointed out the offensive line. If the offensive line can keep the quarterback upright and then open holes for the running game, then that even more takes the pressure mm-hmm. off the quarterback. But with none of that happening right now, without healthy running backs, without an offensive line that's playing up to what we thought they would play up to, then yes, it's going to be it's tough sledding for somebody like Bryson Barnes, who's just thrown into the mix.
Yeah, and that's the concern you got to have right now if you're a Utah fan. Now, flipping over to the BYU side of things, Cougars are on the road today. They're in Fort Worth, Texas. The last time BYU and TCU faced off was in 2011. They did play a neutral site game in BYU's first year of independence. Obviously, they had a good run before that, being members of the Mountain West Conference, some absolutely classic games in that matchup. We're actually coming up. We're 2 days away, Jason. I don't remember if you remember this game. In 2008, remember the fabled Quest for Perfection by BYU.
Yes, yes.
So 2008, BYU was 6-0. They were considered to be the BCS darling, could make the run to a BCS game.
Right.
Well, they went to TCU on October 16th, 2008, with an idea, okay, we beat TCU here, we're off and rolling. Well, on that fateful night, the TCU Horned Frogs, and Jerry Hughes in particular, decided, yeah, that ain't happening, and pummeled BYU to the tune of a 32-7 blowout victory, which derailed everything for BYU that season. So it's been almost, let's see, we're 15 years almost to the day since that. And now they're back together as members of the Big 12 Conference. BYU looking forward to this one. They have not won a Big 12 road game yet. Obviously, their other opportunity to do so was at Kansas. I was out at that game in Lawrence, and BYU hung tough in that matchup. The bigger concern, though, for the Cougars is that, okay, similar circumstance to what Utah's facing right now, you're going to have a young quarterback you're going up against, albeit this quarterback's playing at home. Josh Hoover is going to be starting for TCU today. Chandler Morris suffered an MCL sprain against Iowa State last week. And now BYU has to go to Fort Worth, face off against a quarterback they know very little about. Like, frankly, nobody knows much about him.
Right.
He's a redshirt freshman. He's played very little football. Came in against Iowa State last week through an interception. I also think he also had a fumble, if I'm not mistaken, in that game. And now the Cougars have to go down there and contend with a team that they're going to be desperate. They're 3-3. This is a team, speaking of TCU, who comes off national title run last year to the national title game, I should say, not
Title
run.
Right.
But they did make a run to the national title game, and they look completely night and day different from that team a year ago. Now, you also did graduate a lot of the offense from that TCU team. But their defense has been giving up quite a few rushing yards, speaking of what's going on with the TCU Horned Frogs, is the BYU's rushing offense has been awful so far this season. TCU, though, started out the season very good against the run, but in their last three games, they've essentially allowed double the number of yardage attempts, overall rushing yard per attempt. All those stats have essentially doubled in the last three games versus the first three games of the year.
Right.
If you're BYU, you're going in there. You want to get your running game going.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you say that, though, because I think, honestly, and I'm not trying to say that Keaton Slovis is the greatest quarterback in the history of the world, but honestly, Keaton Slovis is the reason that BYU is where they are, because they are facing the same challenge that Utah's facing. Uh-huh. Utah's facing their challenge because their running backs are all hurt. BYU's facing the challenge because they just can't run the ball at this point.
They've had an ineffective run game so far this year. Aaron Roderick said earlier this week that they essentially treated the bye week as if it was like another week of training camp. They went back to the basics. They said, what'd you work on in the run game? Blocking.
Yeah.
Like, and that's where they need to start there. That's the biggest thing. They need to start there and begin the build from there. The bigger question mark for BYU is, can you go in here, you beat TCU, you're 2-1 in the Big 12 at that point, you're 5-1 on the season. Now, you still have a huge road game at Texas in 2 weeks' time. You have Oklahoma, who just beat the Longhorns, coming to Provo in November. You've got the upstart West Virginia Mountaineers, who are picked to finish last and are off to a rolling start here. You've got a very, very tough slate of games. In some ways, for BYU today, it feels like this is a pivotal matchup for how BYU season is going to be perceived and how it's going to play out. Because, like I said, if you win this game, you're 5-1, you're 2-1 in the conference, and it looks like you're going to be in the mix if you continue to win football games for a run and being a player in the ultimate outcome of the Big 12 conference. Now, you go to TCU, who's 3-3, struggling, desperate, starting a redshirt freshman quarterback, his first career start. You lose that game. What other game on your schedule the rest of the way is winnable for BYU in that circumstance? That's kind of where I go back and forth on this. Is this game will tell us a lot about how BYU has been operating. Now, I've got a lot of confidence in BYU's ability to go win this type of football game because I think that Jay Hill is smart enough to say, okay, here's what we're going to do. They have a good running back. They have a good running game. We're going to jam that up. We're going to force this game to go onto the arm of this young quarterback. And that is where things get interesting here for the Cougars, is there's a lot to track with regards to the perception of how BYU is operating based on the outcome of this one game. Now, every game at the end of the season will obviously be taken into the whole context of how the season progresses, but it feels like today's game, coming off a bye week, having a chance to heal up a little bit and get guys healthy, and now getting back into Big 12 play, it just feels like this game stands out a little bit more than other ones because of the perception of how BYU is going to play down the stretch run of the season, the final six games of a very tough slate of games across the board. You could do a lot to, I think, legitimize yourself or expose yourself with how today's game goes for the Cougars.
Absolutely. There are some winnable games on that schedule coming up. I don't have a whole lot of confidence in Iowa State or Oklahoma
Here's
State.
The thing. Iowa State shut down this TCU team last week. They may be one of the best defenses.
Well, okay, let's say let me put it this way. If BYU wins this game today, then I think that I start looking at those other games, Texas Tech, Iowa State, Oklahoma State. These are now winnable or more, they seem more winnable
to me. You should
be
able to win them.
Yeah. And West Virginia just got upset by Houston this week on that Hail Mary pass.
Crazy game.
Yeah, that was a crazy game. And so West Virginia started off really great, and they've, you know, maybe danced, but you're right. If they lose to TCU, if BYU loses to TCU, then you start looking at it and you're going, okay, how can they match up against these teams that they've got coming up? If they win the game today, then you start looking at those games and you start thinking to yourself, okay, some of these are winnable games. I don't necessarily think they're going to beat Texas or Oklahoma, but, you know, could they then beat Iowa State at home? Could they beat, you know, Texas Tech at home and maybe pick up another win on the road? And considering... Excuse me, where everybody thought that they were going to finish. There are a lot of people were predicting BYU to finish this year. If they get a win today and they're 5-1, I think they're in a position that nobody outside of maybe a bunch of BYU Cougars fans expected them to be.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing about it. Is the other thing about this is with regards to what BYU is doing right now is there were so many people out there saying, I saw predictions from ESPN, some of their talking heads said BYU could go 3-9 this season. And I was like, okay, I get where you're coming from on that. But the thing is, they were saying that UCF has got this all these athletes, and they're going to be the best of the newcomers. The one thing I think nobody, and I mean nobody, paid attention to for whatever reason, maybe some people did, is that BYU was one of the teams that, outside of the new four newcomers to the Big 12, BYU played what I like to call a Power 5 adjacent schedule. We're talking 6, 7, and 8 Power 5 opponents on an annual basis. The other three teams coming into the Big 12 alongside them were from the American Athletic Conference. Maybe they played 2 Power 5 games in a year. BYU's been more battle-tested, and I think a lot of people may have thought, slash projected, slash what they thought about. So in some ways, I think Kalani's talking to his team's like, okay, you can project us as that. I had one member of the BYU staff tell me directly, Jake, I hope they pick us 14th. We want to be the ultimate underdog because it's going to put a fire in our belly. And this week's game, in a way, I think, has given some fire to that because they have installed TCU as a favorite in this game, despite BYU having a better record, all this stuff going in the favor of the Cougars. Now, on a college game day, I was driving in, and Mitch Harper, our good friend over at KSL Sports, tweeted this out. Both Kirk Herbstreit and Pat McAfee have installed BYU as their Superdog picks of the week. BYU's +6 in the margin. I think that they got this wrong, and speaking of the odds makers went about this. I know the odds are set to get people to bet. We all know this. We know how it works. But the bigger thing is I look at it and say, I think the better team is the road team in this matchup. Now, you got to go prove it if you're BYU.
Right.
That's the big question mark. Can you go out and prove all of the people that want to pick you, can you prove them right? That's the biggest thing, is you have to go out there and do it on the football field. We can talk about it all we want, and that's what we do in this circumstance, but we can only react to what we see on the football field, and that's ultimately, I think, what we're going to learn at 1:30 this afternoon.
I think it shows, honestly, to me, it shows the value of an experienced quarterback. Again, I am not trying to say that Keaton Slovis is, you know, the greatest quarterback in the history of the world. However, look at what happened in Georgia. Georgia got off to a little bit slower of a start this year, and everybody has said for 2 years in a row that Stetson Bennett wasn't that great of a quarterback. Yet he won. That's what he did. Is he just won? Look at Alabama. Alabama got off to a slow start this year because they had problems at the quarterback position. Yep. They didn't have an experienced quarterback. There's something to be said for a guy who has been in the games for a long time, knows what he's doing. Look at Utah. Utah's having trouble because they're struggling at the quarterback position. There's something to be said for an experienced quarterback who knows how to get out of trouble and who knows how to extend plays and throw the ball away when he needs to and find an open receiver after scrambling around for a while. Yeah. You're not going to win every game with that kind of a guy. However, you're going to win more than you're going to lose.
Sure, and that's the biggest thing is we're looking at a big opportunity, and you mentioned Keaton Slovis. He's been very impressive this season. Truly, he has been, and I think he's proven why BYU went out and got him in the transfer portal. That's the biggest thing. All right, speaking of TCU, we're going to take a timeout here. We'll come back on the other side. Jeremy Clark from HornedFrogBlitz.com, part of the 24/7 Sports Network, will join us to give us a little more lowdown on who Josh Hoover is, what to expect from this TCU squad, and what he expects in terms of just overall crowd dynamics in today's game between TCU and BYU. Coming up at 11 o'clock, Michelle Bodkin will check in with us from up on the hill at Utah as Utah gets ready to take on Cal. So a lot to go right here on the Saturday show on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone. Welcome back to the Saturday show here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone. Of course, a lot to cover ahead on today's show. We're thinking of today as essentially an extended pregame edition, getting ready for both BYU and Utah, both of their games kicking off within a half an hour of one another. We're going to go out to Fort Worth, though, and check in now with Jeremy Clark from HornedFrogBlitz.com, part of the 24/7 Sports Network. Jeremy, thank you for taking some time. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So I want to start here. Can you let our BYU fans who are listening out there know exactly who Josh Hoover is out of Rockwall, Texas? Who is this young man?
Well, Josh is a guy. It's funny, when Sonny Dykes first got hired at TCU, he was really the first guy he targeted. Josh was the first guy. It's just like one of those quarterbacks that fits Sonny Dykes' system perfectly. Josh in high school, Rockwall Heath is a big Class 6A school down here. He threw for all kinds of yards. I think he threw for over 10,000 yards in his career. But what I really like about Josh, last year he's a true freshman, didn't get a lot of snaps, but you kind of saw in spring camp, man, this kid looks completely different. He transformed his body, lost 25 pounds, played really well in spring camp, carried it over into the summer, carried it over into fall camp, and there was really no question, even though they had a transfer quarterback, Chance Nolan from Oregon State, he wasn't going to beat out Josh Hoover, and that just really showed a lot of things that Josh can do. I mean, he's a good runner. He's a good passer, but this will be interesting. It's going to be his first career start, so we'll see how he does. It's going to be different from how he's played this season because he's always kind of been thrust into action from the sideline. So now he's had a full week to prepare, and hopefully he does well.
Yeah, it's never ideal to lose your starting quarterback, and it obviously is doubly awful for Chandler Morris, having two injuries in two seasons that have forced him to the sideline. Do you expect this offense to change much, if at all, with Hoover under center today?
I don't think it's going to change a whole lot. And quite honestly, I think you may see more vertical passes because that's one thing that you talk to the guys on the team, the receivers especially, that they'll tell you Josh throws a really good vertical ball. And there was times at this season that teams weren't really fearful of Chandler's deep passes. And that kind of took a lot away from their offense. Kendall Browse, if you go all the way back to when Baylor was kind of in their heyday back in 2014, 2015, they were such a good run team, but they also had those vertical threats. And the vertical game this year for TCU really hasn't been there. And they do get a guy, Jalen Robinson. He's kind of their guy that can take the top off the defense. He's going to try to stretch them deep. But I'll say right now that I don't think the offense is going to change. Now, Josh isn't quite the runner as Chandler. He's not the magician. He can't get away from these rushes. Like we call him Houdini down here. It's okay. Just crazy how Chandler gets away from some of these rushes. But, yeah, I don't think we're going to see too much of a change as far as schematics go.
Now, obviously, this was a team all of us were fascinated by the run that TCU made last year. I'm sure all y'all down there in Fort Worth were just loving it, the run to the national title game. It felt like, in many ways, they brought back most of the defense intact from that squad, whereas the offense had a lot of those guys leave for the NFL, led by Max Duggan, et cetera. The defense, though, over the last three games, if you kind of look at the statistical numbers, has had really a major uptick in terms of allowing more rushing yards, more rushing attempts, that type of stuff. What's up with the Horned Frog defense right now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, they had seven guys coming back from last year, and you thought that was going to be the really good part of the team. And, you open up against Colorado, you allow 510 mm-hmm. passing yards, and you're thinking, man, this is not very good. And then they kind of settle down the next few weeks against the run. But you're right, the last 2 weeks they've given up huge chunks to West Virginia, gave up huge chunks last week to Iowa State. And these are two of the teams that were predicted to finish at the bottom tier of the conference. So there are some major concerns right there. They haven't had Johnny Hodges. Johnny Hodges, he's not the most athletic linebacker, but he's a very instinctive linebacker, if that makes sense. He's always kind of in the right place at the right time. And I think him not being out there has hurt them a little bit. Chad Banks has been his replacement. He's more athletic than what Johnny is, but it hurts when you're losing a smart football player. So I think for them, they're going to have a big challenge today. BYU does a really good job running football. They obviously got a big offensive line. And I would point to last week, a big reason why they were giving up so many rushing yards, they were just on the field for a long time. The offense couldn't get anything going for TCU. A lot of three and outs, TCU's defense coming back out there. I think they just got tired. And Iowa State's got a big physical offensive line, big physical tight ends, and you know how football goes. If you're not playing well in the trenches, it's going to be a long day for you.
I wanted to ask you just about how Sonny Dykes has done so far. Obviously, he had that magical first year with TCU. Is the fan base, are they ecstatic with him having stepped in and done what he's done so far? Well, what's the feeling right now sitting at 3-3 this season after that season a year ago?
There's a lot of greed. You
okay.
know, that's what comes for when you play in a national championship.
Yeah.
You want to get out there every year and do the same thing. So, I mean, obviously, first year, I mean, they had a good roster. I don't think anyone expects Max Duggan to play how he did and mm-hmm. finishing up as a runner-up in Heisman. And Quentin Johnson did really well. Steve Obla, big offensive line. They had a lot of key pieces on offense last year that really helped Sonny. And Sonny's an offensive guy that I think this year the expectations were, hey, let's just get back to an 8-9 win season, maybe 10 wins, maybe even challenge for the Big 12 championship berth. And I really felt like going into this season, they had a lot of ingredients. I've covered the team since 05. And just honestly, this team just athletically, top to bottom, from seniors all the way down to true freshmen, it's one of the most athletic, if not the most athletic team I've seen them field. So I knew they had the pieces. But 3-3 right now through six games is definitely not where people expected them to be. If you looked at last week before they played Iowa State, they were 3-2, but they had lost two games by a combined 6 points. Last year, they were winning those games. They were cardiac kids. Everyone tuned in to TCU football to see if they can come back and win those games. And up until Iowa State last week, they were just losing those games. They had, you know, against Colorado and against West Virginia, those two final drives of their game, they were driving to either tie the game or win the game. And against Iowa State, it just all the wheels came off. They didn't play well offensively. Two turnovers, the first two possessions of the game. You're never going to win a ball game like that. Four total turnovers, a block punt inside your own 10, so basically another turnover, and Iowa State just took advantage of those things. But TCU right now at 3-3, it's kind of funny because how you see when players come in and take over for experienced players. I think everyone's excited for the backup quarterback. They're excited to see what Josh Hoover can do, and obviously if Josh goes out today and sets the world on fire and throws for a lot of yards, then everyone's going to kind of be like, hey, Chandler, we're sorry, but you got hurt last year, and now this guy's doing really well. You might have to sit the bench again, because if you go out and see Josh succeed starting today and for the next several weeks while Chandler's out, you're going to have those big questions like you did last year with Max and Chandler.
I think that's a very good point to make right there. Joined by Jeremy Clark from HornFrogBlitz.com, part of the 24/7 Sports Network. And I didn't know you had been covering the team since 05. So you said you've covered TCU since they joined the Mountain West Conference and joined BYU and Utah in the conference then.
Oh, yeah, those were some fun times. I mean, 51-50.
Yeah, I was going to say,
that game. Not to get your listeners
no,
mad
I,
at me.
Yeah.
That's a funny thing, because the guy, Jeff Ballard, that was quarterback for that team every week, he was basically fourth string on the depth chart. Gary Patterson used to tell us all the time, terrible practice player, terrible guy. They can't win games with this guy. And goes out there on every Saturday, and he just makes plays that he didn't make during the week. And that's kind of how, like, Chandler Morris has kind of been this year for TCU. We see him make so many of these great plays in practice, and then when game time comes, he's making mistakes that we don't see in practice. So you know how the old saying goes, sometimes you have practice players, sometimes you just have gamers. And that quarterback back in the day, Jeff Ballard, back in those Mountain West days, he was just a gamer. And, man, those were some fun games. And I think it's been since 2011, if memory serves me right, since TCU and BYU played over there at AT&T. So I'm expecting BYU to have a big crowd down here. I can't wait to get back up to Provo.
Well, yeah, and there was a lot of buzz, obviously, back in those days. I was starting radio right around that same time. You're talking about the late run in the Mountain West for BYU before, obviously, TCU made the jump to the Big 12 and the Cougars went independent. But do Horned Frog fans still have the same type of feelings about BYU, or is it going to take a minute for them to realize, hey, this is one of our old rivals from the Mountain West?
I think it'll take some time because it's funny how just the age group goes. Yeah. You still have a lot of the 40, 50-year-olds that obviously understand BYU. But you know, the way TCU has succeeded in recent years, and especially last year, you have a new fan base, age group, the younger 20s, they're all into that. So I don't know if they appreciate the rivalry that BYU and TCU used to have. Back in the old Mountain West days, but it's really cool to see them back as part of this conference because it's always good to get good quality teams in a conference, especially in this day and age of realignment. So you're looking at a program like BYU and what they bring to the table. The fan base is incredible, and you know, I really look forward to this series over the next few years. I'm hoping, you know, it'd be great for TCU to have a schedule next year and they get to go to Boulder, Colorado, because I love going to Boulder.
Sure.
And get a chance to go up to Provo. So that would be two great trips for me.
Well, I wanted to ask you, but just about like the newcomers, obviously there's changes still on the horizon with four new teams coming into the conference next year while both Texas and Oklahoma exit for the SEC. Where do you stand on all this? Are you okay with where things stand for the Big 12 right now, and also looking ahead to the future?
Yeah, it's tough, man, because we could be talking about this today.
And, sure, yeah.
You know, 6 months from now, we could be talking about more teams leaving. I mean, you're talking to the guy that covered TCU going to the Big East for 30 minutes.
That's how long it
genuinely felt. I mean, they were in the Big East, but then here comes the Big 12 calling. So in this day and age of realignment, you never know what can happen. Can the Big Ten reach out, or can a SEC, for crying out loud, reach out to any of these teams? It's interesting, but I do love what Brett Yormark's doing. I think he's an incredible leader of the conference. I think he wants to get things done. You know, just talking with him and visiting with him, you can tell the Big 12 is in good hands. I really don't think, I mean, what we grew up watching college football, there's no more geographics. It's West Coast to East Coast. There's never going to be any close rivalries like we grew up watching, but that's the way college football is going. To me, just personally, you're asking me, I think 5-10 years from now, we're probably going to see a gigantic super conference, and there'll probably be 40 to 60 teams in it, and there'll be a lot of good teams that are left out. But and that conference may not even be governed by the NCAA. That's how crazy I think this is. So it's all about revenue, TV money, and everything else. So it's especially with the way the NILs come about, I think everything's going to be looking a lot different maybe 5 years from now.
Jeremy Clark from HornFrogBlitz.com joining us here on the KSL Sports Zone. I want to ask you one basketball question, if you don't mind. Of course, some news involving TCU and BYU this week. Malik Diallo, star big man from Wasatch Academy out here in Utah, picks the Horned Frogs. He commits to TCU. How big of a pickup is that for the Horned Frog basketball program?
I mean, it's big. I mean, that's Jamie Dixon and his staff do a really good job of recruiting, and that's they've had a pretty good run here of late.
Yeah,
Jamie's recruiting at a high level, and you know, in basketball, all it takes is just a couple good commits and couple good signees and maybe a couple kids from the transfer portal. And next thing you know, you're going out there winning 25 games. But I think that's huge for them, and they're right there among the nation's elite recruiting wise. I think they're right around, hovering around probably a top 15 class right now.
Now, I do have to say this. I was looking at your Twitter feed earlier. You guys have one of the great commit names of all time in a quarterback. Haas Haney, is that how I pronounce this young man's name?
Man, you're the first person that's ever pronounced his last name right.
Okay, I tried.
So props to you, man. Haas is a really, really good kid. I've known his family for quite a while. Met Haas when he was in eighth grade. Parents are both TCU legacies. Dad played football here. Mom was an All-American basketball track athlete, and you ask them, he gets all the athleticism from her. But great quarterback. I think we've got him ranked in 24/7 as maybe a top 11 quarterback. He just got invited to play in the All-American Bowl. He's I'm not lying when I say this. He might be the fastest quarterback in the nation. He's got a verified 4.46 laser time at the Elite 11 camp. So he is he's definitely the type of quarterback that Kendall Briles wants to bring in and have run his offense. He could throw and he can run.
Well, I just that was a great name. I'm like, you know, I got to ask him about this young man. Alato, Texas, if I'm not mistaken, is where he's from. All right. Well, Jeremy, I look forward to the game, obviously, and a big thank you for taking the time. We'll catch up with you. Like I said, now with BYU in the conference, Utah coming into the Big 12, we'll be frequent visitors talking with you back and forth, hopefully. All right.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Looking forward to a good game today.
There you go. Jeremy Clark from HornFrogBlitz.com. You can follow him on Twitter at JClarkHFB247. Make sure to follow him on Twitter. Some great intel, obviously, on the recruiting front for the Horned Frogs. I'm obviously looking forward to today's game as well. All right, coming back on the other side, we will get to technical fouls, talk about some of the things that happen in sports that are, let's just say, the opposite of good. That's probably the best way to describe. We'll get to that next right here on the Saturday Show.
If you're coming from the street with dirty shoes on your feet, that's a technical foul. If you switch the radio to some modern music show, that's a technical foul. If you touch the thermostat,
you'll get hit with a bat.
Cause that's a technical foul.
You won't feel my wrath.
That's a technical foul.
Personal file, 69, offense. He was giving them the business.
A technical foul.
All right, welcome back to the Saturday Show. You just heard it's time for technical fouls, where we talk about, let's just put it this way, the part of sports that are like the failures and just the bad parts of it. Let's get one out of the way right now, though. And Jason kind of mentioned this earlier when we were talking in the break, and it's one that I was going to bring up if he didn't, but I didn't know this. You are a Miami Hurricanes fan.
I am a Miami Hurricanes fan. Miami Hurricanes fan for 40 years.
So, okay, here's the question then. Do you want them to fire Mario Cristobal after the cluster that happened last week?
No.
Okay.
No. I do have a solution, though, as a Miami Hurricanes fan, for what should really happen. Because Miami Hurricanes fans should not suffer for this, and the players should not suffer for this. Mm-hmm. So what the NCAA should do is leave a win for Georgia Tech, then give Miami a win as well, and force Mario Cristobal to give up half of his yearly salary to buy that win from Georgia Tech.
Oh.
That's my solution right there. That's the best I can come up with as a Miami fan. That was just, I was sad for days.
Well, yeah, and here's the thing about it is you look at how that went down. All you got to do is take the knee. And this is a thing that, by the way, Cristobal has a history of this. He did this while he was at Oregon as well, and cost the Ducks in that circumstance as well. You think you'd learn. And here's the thing. I will also say this. There is a generation, and I'm part of that generation, that grew up playing Madden and NCAA football. And I am 100%, 110% convinced that people of my generation who played all these video games know late game scenario, down and distance, how to handle this stuff better than a lot of the head coaches who actually have to make those decisions in game. That may sound so counterintuitive, but the way I see things going down like this, I'm 100% convinced that's actually a legit thing, that they don't know how to handle this for whatever reason.
Yeah, and you're probably right about that. I mean, that's almost certainly you see that time and time again. You see that they just make. I mean, I will say this as a Miami fan. Manny Diaz did a lot of those kinds of things under his watch, which is why he's not there anymore, and which is why they hired Cristobal, because he had trouble managing games at the end as well. So Cristobal's not the only one, but you're right. There are a lot of college coaches who seem to have a really difficult time figuring out how to manage in end of game scenarios.
Yeah, and it's absolutely just a crazy circumstance. Now, I will also say this: I can from the perspective of what Miami is trying to do. I get you're trying to end the game and whatnot, but you don't need to run the football. And I know that you don't want to have the negative yardage and take that away from it doesn't affect an individual player. It's not the NBA where, in the NBA, I don't know if you've seen this, there are multiple guys late in a shot clock, they will pass off. They do not want the field goal attempt on their box score.
Right.
They need to get rid of that in the NBA and just make it a team shot. Essentially, what they do with NCAA here, when you take a knee, it's a team rush. It doesn't go on anybody's individual record. It just happens to affect in the box score. It says team rush, negative 2 yards. That's what it is.
And somebody else floated a theory because Don Chaney, the guy that they handed the ball off to, was at 99 yards.
Oh.
So there is a theory out there that Cristobal was trying to be the player's coach, let the guy get his 100 yards by handing the ball off to him. As a Miami fan, it took me a while to come back in off the ledge because I was out there, man. That was really bad.
Here's the thing. It's indefensible in so many different ways. It's just like you lost a game that you literally never should have lost. It was over. It's just but that's why we kind of watch sports. We want to see crazy things happen, and that's one of those crazy things that absolutely happened. One other thing real quick. A couple other things real quick. The Russian Olympic Committee, which continues just to step all over and you know what, it feels like all the time, they have been suspended by the International Olympic Committee for claiming Ukrainian athletes as their own.
Oh, jeez.
They have been suspended. Here's the thing. They continue to allow Russian athletes to compete under the, what they call it, the Olympic flag as individual athletes and whatnot. Right. Okay, I know you don't want to punish the individual athletes, but when is too much in essence with what Russia's trying to do here?
I don't know the answer to that, but I mean you're right. I mean you're getting to the point where you got to just be like, okay, enough is enough. Let's just move along here.
Like, you're trying to claim Ukrainian athletes as your own for the Olympic Games. Like, Ukraine is a sovereign nation here, folks. Like, I don't know. It's absolutely insane. They tried to essentially the land that they have captured during this Ukrainian war. They're trying to claim that now those athletes from. It's just like no, they're not. But okay. Also in the soccer world, Lionel Messi allegedly had a Paraguayan player spit on him during a World Cup qualifier. He issued a statement essentially said, I don't know who this guy is, despite the player that spit on him. Antonio Sanabria, they had a Barcelona connection, both of them having played for Barca, but just kind of crazy stuff there. And then Neymar from Brazil, I don't know if you saw this, he was playing for Brazil, had a bag of popcorn thrown at his head.
I saw that, and they called out the fans on that one. The coach was definitely called out. Do they call them coaches in soccer? Is it still coaches? Whatever.
Manager.
Yeah. He called out the fans on that one big time.
Yeah, it was because Venezuela drew 1-1 with Brazil, and here's the thing. These teams, Argentina and Brazil, are neck and neck. They were at least in CONMEBOL Bowl, which they were getting for World Cup qualifiers. Argentina won, so they are now 2 points clear of Brazil after Brazil tied 1-1 with Venezuela. By the way, RSL star Jefferson Savarino playing a role in this game, helped set up that goal for Venezuela, the Vino Tinto, in this game. But yeah, let's just put it this way. Fan behavior at times gets boorish and over the top. I'm glad it was a bag of popcorn and not like a beer bottle. Let's just put it that way.
As bad as it could have been, and as bad as we have seen in past as well.
Yeah, and fan behavior is awful. We're seeing weekly, it feels like I'm seeing another fight video from an NFL game where inebriated fans are beating the crap out of each other. We can be a little better in that regard, but yeah. That's why we do technical fouls, though. We get to talk about people doing stupid things. One other one. I had it. I just closed it. Okay. Well, I'm the idiot who just closed it live on air. But nonetheless, so a lot of stuff going on in the sports world. Looking forward, obviously, to see how this week plays out. Oh, by the way, that was the one I was going to talk about. Houston, West Virginia.
Yeah.
Okay, Garrett Green, their quarterback for West Virginia, gets a 15-yard penalty for celebrating a touchdown that looked like it had won the football game.
Right, right.
In retrospect, that 15 yards played a huge role in a crazy, crazy finish as Houston wins the game. And here's the thing. You gotta keep your helmet on. I think it took his helmet off.
Yeah,
They got him the penalty.
Yeah.
Come on, dude. Like, you got to understand, like, okay, keep the helmet on, get over to the sideline, and then rip it off and do your thing. But get to the sideline before you do it. And I saw their head coach arguing with the referees after the game and whatnot. You can complain all you want. It's very clearly delineated, and we've seen it penalized multiple times this year. You take your helmet off in-game, except we saw it in the NFL this past week and did not get penalized. But more often than not, you take your helmet off on the field of play, flag's coming out.
Right. Yeah, that's a hard and fast rule. You take your helmet off, it's 15 yards. And that Houston quarterback threw that ball as far as he possibly could have. Think if he was 15 yards further back, that ball would have landed 15 yards from the end zone because the guy caught it about the one and then twisted his way into the end zone. If that's 15 yards further up, he's still got to go 15 more yards into the end zone.
Yeah. Crazy finish, by the way. A big win for Houston, obviously, in that victory. Kind of gets their season restarted in a way because they were floundering hard. But a big win for them. And if we talk about football, it's fun. But don't take your helmet off, kids. Learn the lesson here. All right, we'll come back on the other side. We're going to check in with Michelle Bodkin. She is up on the hill getting ready for Utah and Cal. We'll get her perspective on the Cam Rising situation, everything else going on with Utah as they get ready to resume Pac-12 play coming up in a moment right here on The Saturday Show. Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone. Time now to welcome in the other half of this show. She's typically sitting right across from me here, but she is up on the hill at Rice-Eccles Stadium getting ready for today's game as Cal takes on Utah. That is Michelle Bodkin. Michelle, how are you?
I'm doing really well, Jake. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to be back, obviously, and I appreciate you holding down the fort while I was out for a little bit there. But you are getting ready for a football game today, and I guess we'll just say it this way. The Cam Rising watch continues for another week, it looks like.
It sure does. It actually looks like we have some resolve. Pete Femel earlier this morning reporting that Bryson Barnes is going to be starting. So far, he's been correct on his information. I don't have any reason to doubt that he's wrong this go around, but it was a little bit of a surprise announcement to me. I wasn't really entirely sure that Bryson was still okay enough to go. So I kind of good news, I think, for Utah that maybe he's okay to play.
Well, and that's the thing about it is I like you. I was like, okay, he gets sent to the hospital up there in Corvallis after taking that just shot to the sternum/ribs. That, man, it was a brutal, brutal hit. I'm as stunned as anybody being cleared to play, but it looks like they're going to go back, as Pete Thamel kind of alluded to, back to what they did to start the season. You're going to have Bryson Barnes be the traditional quarterback with Nate Johnson being the change of pace guy, and it feels like in some ways this is a good game to have that going, but at the same time, do we expect at any point that Cam Rising will return?
I think there's still hope, but the interesting thing is there has been talks about does he sit the rest of the season and possibly go for a medical hardship type of deal next year. And to be honest, there's no guarantee that he gets that, but apparently there is a bit of a loophole that he maybe would have a good case for it. When traditionally his circumstances actually do not quantify earning one of those. So it's all very fluid. It's a very wait and see kind of situation. And I think we're just going to be on our toes all season, to be honest, as far as what's going to happen.
Well, it does keep us all engaged. There's no doubt about that. It just continues to let you have fun tracking that seemingly day-to-day in a way, Michelle. But the other thing about this is the running back position has been absolutely just crippled by injuries. I found out earlier this week that Chris Curry suffered, what Kyle Whittingham described as a non-contact injury to his healthy knee, which is unfortunate. What's the running back situation looking like for the Utes going into this one against Cal?
Well, you know, I think the big hope at this point is that JJ got enough rest to be effective for hopefully the rest of the season. And, you know, I saw him walking around at practice. And again, it's walking, it's not running, it's not trying to cut, it's not doing running back things. But he seems to be moving around at least in a normal way. Didn't seem as gimpy limpy. So it's going to be interesting here in about a half hour when I walk down to go check out warm-ups and some of that kind of stuff to see how he's doing. But I think that's kind of the big thing outside of hopefully maybe getting one of those three freshmen that they brought in up to speed to where they can maybe help just kind of carry some of the load so that it's not all on DeQuindon, it's not all on Jalen, that they can kind of spread it around and maybe keep some guys fresh. Because, they're between Charlie Vincent being banged up, JJ being banged up, Knock on wood, Jalen Glover seems to be okay at the moment. But, I mean, it really – and then you don't have Mekhi Bernard available. You don't have Chris Curry available. It's looking pretty dire at the moment for that group.
Now, the bye week, obviously, a lot of guys able to heal up, et cetera, and that the hope is that, yeah, they're fresher, obviously, when they get out there and play. What are things looking like in terms of the offensive line? Are you expecting many changes, if at all, along the offensive front?
You know, I think the big thing is that they're hoping at some point to get Johnny Maiea back in the lineup. And I know that he's been really close the last couple of weeks. Hopefully this bye week was the last push. And I think, honestly, they'll probably put him in at center and move Darren Kump out to one of the guard positions. So that's a possibility for a change in lineup. But outside of that, I think the offensive line is going to be what it is. The big thing is, I think because Utah is having to work with and bring on so many young guys, at this point, you know, that offensive line for the most part is the most veteran part of that offense, and they've kind of underperformed. So I think the big message for them is, you know, you guys have to get it going, because if you don't get it going, it just makes it so much harder for our young guys under center, makes it harder for our young guys that are playing running back. It makes the whole thing kind of shut down when you guys aren't doing what you're capable of doing.
Now, the defense has been kind of the redeeming factor all season long for the Utes, obviously. They've been absolutely lights out. And you're expecting more of the same, honestly, because Mendoza is going to be the quarterback for Cal. And we were talking earlier on today's show with Dante Moore, a highly touted freshman, came in with UCLA. Utah's defense just feasted on him. It feels like this is just the recipe for success, is essentially do what you did defensively against UCLA, against the Bears today.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the big goal for this Utah defense. They're going to want to kind of redeem themselves for Oregon State. And not that they played bad against Oregon State.
Sure.
Really, I mean, they were just fine, and they did enough to allow the team to win. It's just too bad that some of the other facets of the game were struggling mightily and didn't carry their part of the deal. But it definitely also was not their best defensive performance of the year thus far. So I think they're going to feel like they need to redeem themselves a little bit. And what better way than to come home, go against a freshman quarterback, which history has shown us. I mean, Dante Moore is the most recent iteration of that. But, you can point to Jaden Daniels, a whole bunch of young starting freshman quarterbacks coming here for the first time. It doesn't go well for them.
Yeah.
And I kind of don't expect it to be any different this go around. It's just a tough place, tough environment. That defense feeds off of this crowd. And I think Fernando Mendoza is going to be in for a bit of a rough day, but it's fine. And it's going to be a great learning experience for him and maybe hopefully, you know, something that kind of helps get Utah back on track.
Can we just acknowledge it's a great name for a quarterback, Fernando Mendoza?
It feels very like Princess Bride to me.
Okay.
My name is Fernando Mendoza. Yeah. You killed my fault. I don't know why it gives me that vibe, but it gives me that vibe. So, yeah, great name. Great name.
Well, yeah, but you're right. The history suggests when you bring a freshman quarterback to Salt Lake City to play against Utah, just prepare for – let's put it – prepare for the worst. It seems like in that way that's the circumstance. But the other concern you got to have, Michelle, is the past two games for Utah, obviously before the bye week, the offense has produced exactly 14 points. So if you're the Cal Bears, conversely, you're thinking about this: if we can generate just enough offense, if we can hold down Utah's offense in our own right, we may find ourselves in a rock fight and get out of there with a victory.
Oh, totally. And I fully expect Cal to come in with exactly that mindset. They kind of did that last week against Oregon State. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, you know, that was at Cal's place.
Sure.
Oregon State was, you know, on the road that game. A little bit different when you're the home team, but still, I think Cal should come into this feeling confident that, I mean, they put points up on a pretty good Oregon State defense. And, they maybe didn't do the best job stopping that offense, but Utah's offense hasn't shown that same kind of propensity. So I think there is reason to maybe feel or believe that you can come in and kind of muddy things up a little bit here and maybe walk away with a win.
Now, it is, if I'm not mistaken, they're wearing the special uniforms this week. UTE Pride, obviously, going on. Did they change the uniforms much this year, Michelle, that from what you could tell? I got a chance to look at them. I just did not get a chance to look at the details on it.
I believe they are exactly the same as what they wore against San Diego State last year.
Okay.
Same helmet. Helmet pattern, and then the black jersey with the red pants.
Yeah, why? They were going to go all black. What was the late change? What necessitated the late change from black pants to red pants, Michelle? Come on, give us the details here. Let's go. Come on.
I'm not sure that there's really details to give. I kind of got the impression that maybe someone grabbed the wrong pair of pants for the photo shoot. So, but you know what? It's kind of fun. I said when we updated our article on KSL Sports, that it's giving a Ring of Fire solar eclipse vibe.
So, yeah.
Okay. So kind of fitting with the solar event happening today, I guess.
Yeah, did you get a chance?
On top of UTE Pride.
Yeah, did you get a chance to go out and see it? Did you get out of the stadium to see it for a second? I walked out during a break to see it just for a minute there.
I've been standing outside for the last hour.
Okay.
I just have not had any of the like glasses to look up at
okay.
it. So I'm not trying to go blind here.
Hey, you gotta protect those retinas. We get that, Michelle. Come on now.
Yeah. Got to keep the eyesight strong because I got things to type up, man.
No, I understand that. Now, I got one other question just with regards to the game today. Is now it starts kind of the back half of the season, obviously, for Utah as they looked at the final seven games of the season. But it feels like the Pac-12 is full of all kinds of possibilities out there. I don't know how much you saw last night of Stanford, Colorado. I was fully expecting at halftime to watch the first part of the third quarter, then go straight to bed. No, I stayed up until well past midnight to watch that game finish, Michelle, and it feels like in many ways that's how this season could go across the board for Utah and the rest of the Pac-12.
Yeah, you know, that was a game I slept through the half where Colorado looked like they had it in hand and woke up just in time to watch the comeback.
Okay, fair enough. So you got lucky then. All right.
Yeah, totally. I timed that well, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things, yeah. The Pac-12 is kind of proving to be, you know, crazy, and anything kind of can happen and go. I feel like, you know, Cal and Arizona State, and obviously Stanford to this point have all, they're not great teams per se, but like they've kind of had people on the ropes a lot more than I think you would expect. And so, talking about Arizona as well with USC the other day, and then you have some of these, you know, top tier teams that maybe have looked a little bit mortal than we were expecting them to. So anything goes in the Pac-12, and you know, I think we're just kind of in for some wacky, weird, wonderful treats heading forward. So that's kind of my take on it.
Well, yeah, then there was a tweet last night. I think it was from Paolo Ughetti, who works for ESPN, if I'm not mistaken. He said that it feels like at this point, every Pac-12 after dark game feels like a collector's item. And I was like, that's actually a really, really good point on that point.
Yeah, no, I what are we going to do without Pac-12 after dark?
Like, I don't know.
It's been the highlight of my life for like the last 10 years, because anything can happen Pac-12 after dark. We saw it last night.
I guess the hope will be that some of it translates over to Big 12 after dark with some of the new programs, including Utah jumping in.
Maybe. I mean, Houston definitely put that to work on Thursday.
Yep.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe so. Maybe we're going to be starting to talk about Big 12 after dark. Who knows?
We'll have to wait and see. One, last thing from you, Michelle. What's your prediction for today? Did you make a prediction?
I did. And now I'm trying to I know I said Utah 27.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember what I said for Cal. I think it was like 17 or something like that. But I think this offense gets on track. And again, I'm not saying that they're going to put up 50 points. Like, they're just missing too many pieces, I think. And I think the coaching staff is trying to play it as safe and careful as possible. But I do think that they will do things that will make them look much more efficient than they have the past two games, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So that's kind of what I'm expecting from this group today.
So 27-13 was your final. I just pulled it up on KSLSports.com. And I think that's pretty fair. Is it going to – here's one other question. I know I said my last thing. About, does the defense does the defense score points in today's game?
I think they could.
Okay.
I think they. I think that's reasonable to maybe expect. They did it, you know, against UCLA.
Correct.
And their freshman quarterback, and you're going against another freshman quarterback. I think this defense is more than capable of pulling that off.
All right. Well, we will shall see, and obviously we'll be tracking all your work. Enjoy the game today, Michelle, and of course, big thanks as always for all your great work, and of course, being co-host here on this program as well.
Oh, of course, Jake. Looking forward to. Actually, I probably won't see you next week because I'll be in LA.
Yeah,
but
you're heading to USC.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. No, I'll probably see you. Probably the week of the Oregon game. I suspect that's probably going to be a late game.
I would imagine so. All right. Well, thanks as always, Michelle. And once again, enjoy the game today. And obviously, we'll be tracking all your work at KSLSports.com and on social media.
All right. Thanks so much, Jake.
There you go. Michelle Bodkin, of course, Utah Utes insider for KSLSports.com and the co-host of this fine program. Big thank you to her for taking the time. She'll be on her way out to final trip for Utah probably for quite a while, going to USC next week. Of course, a big storyline there, the final battle between the Trojans and the Utes. They've had some really, really fun games in the recent past, but obviously you got to take care of business against the Cal Bears today. All right, we will come back on the other side. We'll get to 5 minutes of. We have brackets, by the way. I don't know if people pay attention to Utah high school football. I do. I'm lucky enough to call football games for KSL Sports Rewind. The RPI rankings, the final rankings are out. We have brackets for all the different divisions, including eight-man football in the state of Utah. Break a little bit of that down. We'll talk about the Utah Jazz in action tonight and a whole lot more coming up next right here on The Saturday Show. Welcome back to The Saturday Show here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone. Jay Catch along for the ride on this Saturday morning. Hope you all are doing well out there. Big thank you for all of you tuning in, wherever you might be listening, whether it's on the KSL Sports app, 97.5 FM, 1280 AM, all the different ways you can get the show. Also, it's also podcasted as well. Just search out The Saturday Show wherever you get your podcast, and you can listen to it that way or KSLSports.com. A couple scores of note. I'm just looking over the screen here. We got Florida State beating up on Syracuse 17-3. You also have here's the thing. You want to know the new era of streaming, Jason, is that all of these streaming partners have all gone with these multi-box TV options. This is the first time I've seen this. I'm on the ESPN app here on our in our studio. They now have a multi-box feature.
Wow.
So I've got both Syracuse, Florida State, and I've also got Alabama beating up on Arkansas 21-6. By the way, I know this sounds trite in a way. Arkansas might be the best 2-4 team in the country.
You're right. No, you're right about that.
Because they've played an absolute murderer's row. And the losing streak they're on started with the loss to BYU.
Right.
They've been actually very good. They just played very good teams in the SEC. LSU. They're playing Alabama today. It's 21-6 right now.
Yeah.
They literally just got to halftime in that game. So crazy times, obviously, and we're looking forward, obviously, to the games today. I meant to mention this earlier. Pretty wild game last night for Utah State in their own right. They ended up losing that game to Fresno State. Here's the thing, though. They didn't fall behind by 17 points in the first quarter. That's a positive step in the right direction for the Utah State Aggies. They do drop to 3-4 on the season. It feels like in some ways the Aggies are a team that they have very small margins for error, if that makes sense, in terms of if they want to win a football game, they've got to play really, really good football, and they have to have their star player step up and do it. It doesn't feel like right now the Utah State has the same, I guess, depth or margin for error that they had just two seasons ago when they won the Mountain West.
Right, and I'm telling you right now, I watched the game. Cooper Legault doesn't throw that interception at the end, and they're going to go down and score. I mean, there was not a whole ton of defense being played in that game, but you're right. That's where the margin of error is, that they can't throw that last interception. It can't happen on that last drive, but if he doesn't throw that, I think they go score and win that game.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff, obviously. The hope is that McKay Hillstead will be able to get back into action at some point. But in the meantime, Cooper Legault is continuing to ball out. Terrell Vaughn still remains very, very good. The trio of running backs, Rasul Faison had the really, really nice touchdown run last night as well. it feels like there are pieces there for what they're doing with the Aggies up in Logan. So we'll see what happens with regards to Utah State the rest of the way. Obviously, just a tough loss last night. That Fresno State team is very, very good. Getting ready for BYU and Utah coming up later this afternoon. Top of the hour, the Ute pregame show will begin at noon. I'll be at Lloyd Cole and Christian Cox getting you ready for Utah and Cal. 12:30, we'll split the signal. Alex Carey and myself will be getting you ready for BYU and TCU on the road. Should be a fun day full of football. Obviously, we got RSL action later tonight as well, by the way. Real Salt Lake is taking on the Los Angeles Galaxy. Now, it is an international window for soccer, so RSL has been fairly shorthanded coming into this game, but this is the game that was rescheduled as a result of the hurricane that blew through Southern California earlier on this season, necessitating the games. RSL is supposed to be at LA Galaxy that weekend. It's supposed to be a Sunday game, if I recall correctly. They said, we're not playing it, we're going to postpone it. So they stuck it in this window. It's one of just three Major League Soccer games this weekend. The full league will be in action next week on Decision Day, the final day of games, obviously getting ready for the playoffs. The nice part is RSL will be playing in the postseason. The bigger question today is regards to, okay, RSL, if they win today, they jump to fourth place. They can get up into the upper half of the playoff bracket in Major League Soccer, and that's the hope you got to be going for if you're RSL here. Now, you have injuries you're dealing with. I am not expecting them. I actually can pull this up right now. Let's take a look real quick. I haven't seen any updates on this today, but the bigger question is going to be, okay, how do they deal with the injuries? You had some of your star players get injured. You have a red card for Justin Glad last week, 37 seconds into the match. The second fastest red card in Major League Soccer history. That's something we learned last week, Jason. I know you just like mouth
37 seconds?
And it was a legitimate red card. The other one, the only other one faster in Major League Soccer history, 34 seconds into a match.
Wow.
A goalkeeper took out a guy back in like the 90s or something like that and got sent off. And crazy, crazy times across the board. Yeah, the big question is going to be with four players out on international duty, you got Jefferson Savarino with Venezuela, Brian Ojeda with Paraguay, Rubio Rubin with Guatemala, and Kevon Lambert with Jamaica. You have Justin Glad out due to a red card. You also have injuries to Chicho Arango, Danny Musovski. So you're going to be ham and egging this here for RSL. They brought up three academy players to join the lineup because they're just shorthanded. They have extreme hardship rules in play. Should be an interesting one tonight. 7 o'clock start for Real Salt Lake. Looking forward to that one, and we'll see how it goes. Oh, no, excuse me, not 7 o'clock, 8:30. You're on the road. Duh, my bad. It's late night tonight for RSL. So looking forward to that. Now, also, just because we have everything else going on, we talked about this to start the show. Let's go right back to it. October is a crazy time, folks.
Yeah.
Utah Jazz in action tonight, taking on the Portland Trailblazers. Preseason action continues. This is the preseason home opener for the Jazz. They'll be back inside, once again, the Delta Center, formerly. The change obviously happened during the summer, but the Jazz have not played in the arena since the rebrand happened, and obviously looking forward to that. The bigger thing for the Jazz here is, do they have a point guard? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know how much you've seen of them so far, Jason. What have been your impressions through the preseason so far?
I mean, there are point guards there.
Sure. Do they have a starting one?
That's the question.
Good question.
That's the real question that they've got. I mean, yeah. They don't have anybody that I'm gonna be like, oh, okay, this guy is. There's nobody that has separated themselves to this point to be like, yeah, that's the guy right there that's going to be the starting point guard. They've had some nice moments here and there, and there are some guys that look like they could competently, you know, be the guy and run the team. But I don't know that anybody has actually separated themselves at this point and said, oh yeah, I'm the guy that's gonna be the point guard on the team. So. But that's what the preseason's for, you know, is to try and figure this stuff out.
Yeah.
And hopefully somebody will, you know, shine. And now the real question is, does Portland have a point guard since they trade Damian Lillard away? And the answer was probably not at this point.
And we're going to see, by the way, Dame and Giannis Antetokounmpo are supposed to play together for the first time as members of the Milwaukee Bucks tonight as well in preseason action. So that's obviously a storyline to track in the NBA with that trade going down. But you're right. It's a very interesting season ahead, it feels like, for both the Jazz and the Trailblazers, because the Jazz exceeded a lot of expectations last year, went and got what I think is a pretty good draft haul. By the way, let me just say this about the Jazz real quick. all y'all Jazz fans who are like bagging on Taylor Hendricks right now, slow down. Slow down. I know you want to see him on the court. I know that they're playing guys like Simone Fontecchio in front of him. I know all that's happening. But let me reiterate to some of you, and I think I've said this on social media with some people as well, is that Ochai Agbaji, who ended up being a very, very good player for the Utah Jazz last season, spent a significant period of that season in the G League playing for the Salt Lake City Stars. He started the season with the Jazz and looked in over his head, frankly. I watch all 82 games plus whatever preseason games every year. It's part of the gig with this job. I remember Ochai Agbaji. I'm like, okay, this guy was the most outstanding player in the Final Four. He's going to slot right in. He should fit in right. Cool. Comes out with the Utah Jazz start the season last year and was like, this dude is just, he couldn't figure it out. He was in his own head, it felt like, in certain circumstances. And the speed of the game felt like was too much for him at that point. Well, what do? They turn and say, okay, we're sending you down to the G League. Don't look at it as a demotion. Look at it as a chance to go down, work on here's what we need you to work on. We need to work on your shot and give him a list of things to work on. He goes down there and stands out with the Salt Lake City Stars. And when they brought him back over to join the Utah Jazz, he looked like a completely, completely different player. That's the hope for a guy like Taylor Hendricks here as well, is that, yeah, he may not start the season in the rotation for the Utah Jazz. Now, you'd like to, because he's a lottery pick and all that stuff, think that, okay, he's capable of doing that. But I think the Jazz know what they have in him. They wouldn't have drafted him if they didn't think that they have something that they can work with. It may take some time to get that out of him this season. He may spend some time with the Salt Lake City Stars playing for Steve Wojciechowski and the Stars. It's not the worst thing in the world. We've seen a lot of guys, Rudy Gobert included, who have played in the G League and gone on to have really, really solid careers. So please, 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 please stop with the, he's a bust. He hasn't even played a regular season NBA game, folks. Stop it.
Rarely do any guys outside of the top five picks actually star. And there are occasionally ones that do. But,
sure.
But, I mean, there's something to be said for being able to bring a guy along and develop him over time. And I know the NBA it's a little bit different. It's a little bit quirky, you know, in that sense that they expect your guys to come in right away and to be amazing. Yeah. The kid's 19, okay? Let's keep that into perspective. He's 19. He's not LeBron James. Nobody was expecting him to be LeBron James. He wasn't going to be, or Kobe Bryant. They weren't going to be 18 years old, 19 years old, and come into the league and immediately dominate. Let's give these kids, you know, think back to when you were 19 years old. Were you not only physically, but mentally ready for something like this?
I was in the physical prime of my life. What are you talking about here? No, I mean,
cut the guy a little bit of slack. You know, I think part of the problem is that everybody saw what Keontae George did in the summer league.
And that doesn't help, yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, Keontae George, you know, he was picked later, so Taylor Hendricks should be in that, you know, at least that good, if not better. Okay, Keontae George played great in the summer league.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll see what happens. I'm not saying that Keontae George isn't going to play well. He may end up being a really good player. But let's take a breath and let's figure out, you know, let's give him some time to actually get in, play some games in the NBA, mm-hmm. and figure out if they're actually going to be competent players.
Well, see, and that's a very good point you make, because I do think that the Keontae George breakout of what he did in the summer league had Jazz fans thinking, okay, wow. But here's the thing. He stunned everybody. Because this is a kid that bulked up to play a different position when he got to Baylor last year and then dropped that weight. And he came out and everybody's like, hold on. This is the guy we saw in high school and playing for AAU. Like, there were a lot of people out there that were questioning why the Jazz took him.
Right.
And to your point also is that right now with what's going on, if he was as good right now for the Jazz in the preseason, he was in the summer league, he'd probably be the starting point guard right now.
Right.
The problem is, and I think Clint O'Pete sent this in to DJ and PK, says this: what I've gathered from the preseason, David James and Patrick Kinahan, is that there was a good reason that the Jazz have about 10 guards on that roster, because they have no idea who the starting point guard is going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, I mean, I'm, yeah. I mean, it could be Clarkson, it could be Sexton, but
it could be THT.
I mean, it could be any one of those. But But there's nothing wrong with that necessarily. Having 10 guys on there, and like I say, hopefully one guy will distance himself over the course of these games, and you can say, okay, that guy is definitely going to be the starter. He's the definite starter. But if not, then there, it doesn't hurt to have depth. And you know, and you can stash some of these guys in the G League and get them minutes, get them experience against, you know, a higher level of competition than they were getting when they were in college, and hopefully they can develop into something. But give them time.
Yeah, and the interesting part about this Jazz season ahead is it feels like with the Jazz doing what they did last season, and obviously they ended up shutting it down towards the tail end to improve their draft position a little bit. They exceeded expectations last year.
Right.
Now, that obviously lends itself to this year. Okay, they're pushing for the playoffs. They could push for the playoffs. They also could find themselves being a lottery team as well.
Right.
It feels like this season, it's not, this is not the final product of what the Utah Jazz are supposed to be. No. Lowry Markkanen was an incredible find a year ago.
Yeah.
To become an all-star like he did and do what he did for the Jazz was awesome. Let's just enjoy what they're building right now for the Jazz. I don't think that, have you heard anybody from the Jazz front office or coaching staff say, you know what, this is the year of pushing all the chips in? No.
No.
They know it's going to be a multi-year process with this. They're going to remain competitive. That's part of the whole gig in the NBA. They want to remain competitive. They know that Jazz fans expect a certain level of competitiveness.
Sure.
Jazz fans won't sign up for the process that Philadelphia went through.
No.
Nor will many fan bases,
exactly.
Frankly. And I don't think Philadelphia 76ers fans were happy about that, obviously, having a team that's winning 10 games a year and that type of stuff. The nice part is, though, is that the Jazz are they're putting pieces together. And like I said, this is a puzzle that is not done yet. Like, Lowry Markkanen looks the part of a puzzle piece, a guy that the Jazz can build around.
Right.
Keontae George, based on what he did in the summer league, looks like a piece.
Right.
The thought was that when you brought in some of these guys Taylor Hendricks, well, he looks like the prototypical four man who can play outside in, and obviously with his ability to leap and shoot the three, that he can become that stretch four that you want him to be. You mentioned, Jason, to your point, a very good point, he's 19 years old. So let's just pump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah.
There's a process to be completed here, and we'll see. It'll be interesting to see where it ultimately goes. By the way, that game set for 7:00 tonight. If you're coming out to the Delta Center, hope you guys enjoy it, obviously, or you can listen to all the action right here on your exclusive radio home for the Utah Jazz, the KSL Sports Zone. David Locke, Ron Boone will be on the call, and the NBA season is not far off. It's crazy to think about. Jazz have two more preseason games next week, one against the New Zealand Breakers out of the NBL down there in Australia. They're coming for an overseas tour, and then they will be headed to Portland, if I'm not mistaken, for their final preseason game. It'll be a Thursday night, I believe, when they play that game. So looking forward to that. All right, one other thing before we go in this segment is I mentioned right before the break that the UHSAA has put out its brackets for the Utah High School football playoffs. Obviously, a really, really fun time of year. I know that it feels like in some ways that the high school season just started, because trust me, I've been calling games for 10 weeks for high school football, and it literally to me feels like it's just started. But nonetheless, the regular season has come to a close, and we have the final RPI rankings and also the brackets. Now, I didn't know this, Jason. You've got a son that plays for the Sky Ridge Falcons.
That is correct.
They are the 4 seed in the 6A playoffs.
I see that.
I'm hosting the Farmington Phoenix.
And if they win that game, they will likely match up with one of the teams that they lost to this year,
Pleasant Grove. Yeah, that was a crazy game.
It was a strange game. It was kind of like the Colorado Stanford game, tale of two halves there, because Sky Ridge dominated the first half and then Pleasant Grove dominated the second half.
Yeah, the fun part about this is a crazy time of year. I look forward to this every single year. Funny enough, I'll always remember, so 2 postseasons ago for high school football, I will never forget this. So Parker Kingston is now a pretty good player for the BYU football program, played at Roy High School. I was scheduled to call the Roy Westlake game. It was a 5A playoff game, first round matchup, and literally it's about this time 2 years ago. Well, the night before that, my wife is just in awful pain. And my wife, I will freely admit this, she's the real athlete in the family. She played collegiate softball. Like, my kid's getting, like, you talk about talking about wanting to get the athleticism from a parent.
Yeah.
My kids better get it from Mrs. Hatch.
Yeah.
Well, she was in awful pain. And she, trust me, she is as tough as nails. So we ended up spending the entire night in the ER. I did not get any sleep. I came in and I got out of the ER, got her home, got her situated. I came in to DJ and PK, and then immediately after DJ and PK, headed up to Roy High School to call this game. And it was an absolute barn burner of a game. 43-42 was the final. Westlake comes back to win it over Roy. Parker Kingston was like a one-man show, it felt like. I know that Roy, football's an 11-man game, but Parker Kingston was just so good in that game and just came a couple plays short of winning it. I will forever remember that because I went like a full like 36 hours without sleeping. It was crazy stuff. That game will be forever ingrained in my brain just simply due to all the circumstances surrounding it with my wife and everything. But it's high school football. It's fun. American Fork is the number one seed for the 6A playoffs. Corner Canyon, led by Isaac Wilson, obviously the Utah commit, they're the number two seed. But they will both have byes this week. They will not play a game until the 27th. They will play. So for American Fork, they'll play the winner of Fremont and the aforementioned Westlake Thunder. And then the Copper Hills-Layton matchup, whoever wins that will take on Corner Canyon. But looking forward to this. This is a really, really fun time of year. Now, 6A playoffs only have two first-round games, Fremont and Westlake this week. But if you drop down to the lower divisions, that's the funner stuff is where you have a lot of these first-round games. You have, let's see, 8 first-round games in the 5A playoffs. Tempview, the number one seed in the 5A ranks. Springville, number two. Roy, who we just talked about, the number three seed, has had actually a really, really good season. And then the four seed is the Box Elder Bees. So should be an interesting season ahead. KSL Rewind, obviously, will have plenty of streams for you. I will be out on a call somewhere next week. I don't know quite yet. I would assume it's one of these 5A games I'll probably be at. There's a couple good ones here, though. Wasatch Orem looks like it could be just an absolutely crazy game. I'm actually very intrigued by Kearns versus East. Those are two teams that are Salt Lake Valley schools. They've got long traditions going up against one another. And then also you have the, where was it? Oh, there we go. Bountiful Cedar Valley. Now, Cedar Valley's out by where Jason and I live, not too far away. They're out in Eagle Mountain out there. They have not had the season they expected, but they've got a lot of good athletes. Meanwhile, Bountiful has been a really, really good program this year. Really, really fine season for them. So I'm looking forward to this. I know that high school football doesn't necessarily do it for everybody, but for me, it's an opportunity. I love high school football because it's a look at what the kind of the future of some of these college programs are. I've seen some of these athletes. I'm like, okay, well, that guy's going to be a stud for wherever he commits to. Like Isaac Wilson, for example. I think he's a very, very good football player, and he's been lights out for Corner Canyon this year. And I think he's answered a lot of the questions that a lot of people were like, well, can he really do it? He's proven to be an elite quarterback. Now, he has to go prove it at the collegiate level for the Utes, but Kyle Whittingham and his staff, they don't necessarily just offer guys to offer them. They believe that these guys are capable players, and they also have a lot of Isaiah Garcia's committed to Utah, playing for Corner Canyon. He's an offensive lineman who I think is – he's a future like star at left tackle, I think, at the collegiate level. You also have what's his name? Who's the star defensive end for Corner Canyon? Names escaped me all of a sudden, but – it's fun to see kind of the future. There are multiple guys. I encourage you, if you want to watch the best football this coming weekend in certain circumstances, get out to a high school football game and watch some of these studs obviously playing. It's one and done from this point on for a lot of these programs. Well, all of them, actually. Not some of these. All of them. You got to win or you go home. It's simple as that. All right, so plenty of coverage ahead on KSL Rewind. We'll have coverage for you guys coming up this coming Friday. Plenty of streams for you guys. And of course, live calls as well. I would encourage you guys to check out. Make sure you don't miss a KSL Rewind Red Zone as well. Should be fun to obviously have Dusty and Jeff Hansen breaking things down on that program next Friday as well. All right, we will come back on the other side. We'll wrap up this program, this edition of the Saturday Show. It's coming up next right here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone. Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone. Wrapping things up on this edition of the show. It's good to be back, by the way. And I got to say, by the way, on a personal note, thank you to all of you who reached out. My wife had a kid. This goes back. We're now 2-plus weeks removed. A lot of well wishes being sent my way, and just thank you on a personal note for all that. It's good to have him home, and my other two kids think he's the greatest thing since sliced bread, so it's been fun to have baby Landon, Landon Hatch, a new addition to the Hatch family, but thank you once again for the support on that side of things. I need to issue a correction and retraction. Our good friend Scooter Burke, obviously a longtime listener to the show, I said the Utah Jazz actually closed out the 2023 preseason in Sacramento against the Kings on Thursday. So I apologize. I screwed that up. I had Portland on the brain and thought it was a rematch. No, it's the Sacramento Kings, obviously. And by the way, the Kings, that's a fun team to watch. I don't know, a lot of people out there, they don't have the bandwidth in many respects to watch all these teams. What I've seen of the Sacramento Kings, I love the way that they play. Mike Brown, their head coach, they play a free-flowing style of basketball, and it seems like the years, like we're talking like almost two decades worth of futility with the Sacramento Kings, it's gone for the time being, and hopefully we can enjoy a little bit more of what the Kings bring to the table, because that's a team they can get after. They're really, really fun to watch, and it'd be a fun one to see the Jazz take them on Thursday night. So, Scooter, thank you for the correction there. I apologize for messing that up earlier. All right, a couple of notes before we go on today's show is I want to get some predictions. I want to get Jason's prediction on this. So, Jason, I just want two predictions from you.
Okay.
First one, Cal Utah, who are you expecting to win?
Yeah.
You have a score, by the way.
What's that?
You have a score prediction.
Yes, I have a score prediction. Okay. Yes. I expect Utah to win.
Okay.
I expect the defense to score a touchdown.
All right.
I do not expect Cal to be able to do much against Utah's defense. I think that it's getting to the point now where the defense has sort of come to the realization that there's probably not going to be a Cam Rising anytime soon, so they have to be the ones. I've got Utah 24-10.
Okay, and then what you got for BYU TCU?
Wow, that's gonna be a good game. I think there's gonna be a lot of points scored, and I think there's even gonna be a lot of points scored on TCU side, even with a freshman quarterback. I think there's gonna be a lot of points scored, but I think that having that experience at quarterback, I keep talking about that, and I think that that's an important thing to have the experience at quarterback, and so I think ultimately BYU is gonna pull this game out. It's gonna be somewhere, I'm going to say 37-34, okay. Something to that effect. That's where I'm going.
I can see that, yeah, no doubt. I'm expecting both BYU and Utah to win today. I think the Utes, similar to what you think, I think the Utes will just shut them down on defense. It's what they have to do. That's what the feeling of this season looks like it's going to be, is going to be the defense, kind of the classic Kyle Whittingham style. Defense is dominant, shuts these teams down, that you get just enough to get the W. I'm saying something like Utah like 20, Cal 10. I think it's a lower scoring game once again. Now, with regards to BYU, TCU, I'm a little more bullish on BYU. I think Keaton Slovis is going to get it done. I think BYU finds a little bit more of that running game in that matchup. On my podcast this week, Locked On Cougars, I predicted BYU 31, TCU 23. So we'll see where things stand. But coming up next, it is the Ute pregame show. Lloyd Cole, Christian Cox, getting you ready as Utah gets ready to take on Cal. It's a 1 o'clock kickoff on the Pac-12 Network. Then at 12:30, we will split the signal over on 1280 AM. Alex Keery and myself will get you ready for BYU and TCU. That one, a 1:30 kickoff on ESPN. So, of course, we'll have post-game reaction for both of those programs immediately after they go final. So keep it locked right here on The Zone. All day long, Jazz and RSL later on tonight as well. And a big thank you once again for your support of the show. Check out the podcast, is what I was trying to say, wherever you get it, if you missed any part of today's program. And a big thank you once again to Jason for producing. Thank you to Michelle for joining us as well. And, of course, until next week, have a great rest of your day, my friends. This has been the Saturday Show right here on 97.5 FM, the KSL Sports Zone.